This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's the Hockey News Podcast. Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell, Ryan Kennedy. And before we get started, I want to give a shout out to our boy, our producer, Stephen Ellis. I tell you right now, good guy, Stephen Ellis, Canadian boy. He's got a dislocated shoulder right now, no visor, and he's still doing the podcast, okay? So I just wanted to say, Stephen, we love you.
His playing hurt.
He's hurt, like he's holding his shoulder right now.
Yep. Should we tell how it happened?
Like, yeah, you can tell how it happened.
Yeah, he got hit by a cameraman at the Toronto Indy or something like that. Like, you know, even if that really happened, you might want to just say, yeah,
dress it up a little bit.
Playing frisbee football, or I was, you know, I was saving a family from a burning building or something. Like, I got a cameraman backed into me and separated my shoulder.
But the cameraman was dodging a crash. So, like, that's pretty, you know, Stephen was close to a crash. That's pretty badass, I guess, you know? Sure. So, right now, we're getting close to the dog days of summer. We're not quite there. You know, there's still a lot of RFAs out there that haven't gotten their offer sheets or signed their contracts. But we're close. So during these slower times, it's always fun to do an all mailbag edition of the Hockey News. We're going to do that today.
Yeah,
so
We're all mail bag.
So we're going to start with a question from, it appears to be my dad. And it's really...
I like how you say it appears to be.
You can tell because he wrote some adorable like words of support in the question. So he writes, when my son played hockey, I tried not to be one of those dads who coaches hated, and he puts in brackets, maybe my son is a hockey writer, albeit an excellent one, not an NHL player. Ah, oh, dad. Which NHL players have the worst hockey dads? Do teams shun or avoid signing players with nasty dads?
Okay, first of all, there's just a couple of things I have to say.
Let's unpack.
Number one, the coach hated your dad because you were his son and you were playing on the
and
team.
I was terrible.
Yeah, I know. That's why your coach, the coach hated your dad.
Well, the running joke in my family was like, Matt who? Like when I did something embarrassing, like I fell down on a breakaway and then I cried or, you know.
And then, excellent hockey writer. Who's gilding the lily just a little bit
just
there,
a bit.
Maybe?
I'm a solid B minus. So to answer my dad's question, though, it is legitimately a thing. I'm not sure everyone knows this, but there are a lot of NHLers that have dads that behave like the deranged rep hockey parent that just won't leave the coach alone. And we even get dads that won't leave us alone, sending stats about their sons.
Yeah.
Who would be the pick for you guys?
Ty Domi.
Yeah.
Not quite.
Ty Domi.
So as Max Domi's dad.
Yeah, as Max Domi's dad.
As opposed to Ty Domi's dad.
As opposed to Ty Domi's dad.
Right.
No, Ty Domi, Max Domi's father.
Okay.
Yes.
You want to elaborate or?
just a lot of coaches have been subjected to his suggestions. Let's put it that way.
I'm not going to go specific, but I will say to the second part of the question about teams shunning or avoiding signing these players, they don't. And I know this because you hear a lot of chatter from scouts about nightmare dads and nightmare parents. If a kid's good enough, it's not going to be a problem. I remember asking one player about one player in particular. He's an NHL star now. And at the time, his dad was very involved. His dad also played in the NHL. And what the scout told me was, you know what, right now the kid's 17, but when he's 21, 23 years old, he won't be, you know, under the dad's influence as much, so you don't worry about it too much. So.
I think all things being equal, though, like if you're picking between two players, I would say that all things being equal, you're going to go with the lower maintenance.
Sure.
As a tiebreaker,
yes.
So it hurts marginal players more, guys that are in the quad A tier that have a chance to make it.
Yeah.
But.
And there's a ton. Like, I mean, there's a lot of them out there. And they not just guys who played in the NHL. I mean, there are a lot of crazy, crazy players. Parents out there. You
know? And it's weird. We get contacted sometimes, and there's a certain player. I don't know if I want to name the player, but there's a player that's been in the news a lot. Enough of a newsmaker to have been on the cover of our magazine before. Okay, that's the way I'll describe the player. But when we have a player who's that big on the cover, but the dad is still emailing us saying, don't forget about this stat. Hey, you should put my son here. It's a little out there. You know, it does feel like rep hockey all over again. So that's a good question, Dad. Thanks, Dad. Okay, now let's get away from the nepotism, and we're going to go to Vili Pananen. And Vili asks, in a fantasy world, and he puts in brackets, or reality, since Wayne Gretzky got traded, what would be the price of a Connor McDavid trade, and who would go for it? Please show your best effort and imagine the packages you just can't say no to. So Vili wants us to really put some work into this. I've concocted a trade. Ryan, let's start with you.
All right, I have two. This is a fun question, and I do like these, because you have to say to yourself, what would Edmonton consider, and what would the other team, because it's got to be pain for the other team. You're getting the best player on the planet, so there's got to be some pain.
That's where I'm going with it when it's my turn.
Yeah, okay, so I got two. My first is, and also, you can't trade him within conference, because that would be a nightmare, right? So my first is Florida. Alexander Barkov and Aaron Ekblad.
Ooh.
You get your number one center if you're the Oilers, and a pretty good one at that, and you also get a top-pairing defenseman, which you obviously sorely need. And the salaries, I didn't do them off the top of my head, but I think it would probably be at least in the ballpark where you can make it work. The second one, and this is more of a futures package, to the Islanders, Matt Barzal, Anthony Beauvillier, Ryan Pulock, and two first-rounders.
Interesting.
I think that's enough of a price that both teams would be down for it.
That's good. It's fun. I almost did a Barzal package as well. I ended up doing Boston instead. David Pastrnak and Charlie McAvoy for Connor McDavid. So Pastrnak's contract is one of the best in the NHL. He's still in the sixes, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. And McAvoy's an RFA right now, but let's say even McAvoy signs for a $7 million AAV. That would only be about $1 million difference from McDavid. And the Oilers still stay young. They get two foundational pieces that are still going to be really good for a long time. But the Bruins, you know, Patrice Bergeron eventually is going to age out of being a number one center, so they have their foundation for years to come. McDavid costs a pretty penny, but hey, it's Connor McDavid, man, so that's my trade.
Okay, so if you're the Edmonton Oilers, you have to ask the question. Are we better off with what we have and Connor McDavid, or would we be better off without Connor McDavid and none of what we have, right?
Okay.
So therefore, you take McDavid, you're taking our roster.
You're taking literally?
You're taking our whole team.
Wow.
You're taking our whole team. And you know what?
A 23-for-23 trade?
Yeah, no, nothing. You take Connor McDavid, you're also taking Milan Lucic, you're taking Chris Russell, you're taking our goalies, you're taking everything.
Epic.
Everything.
Epic.
Okay.
And you know what? We'll start over again.
So the return is nothing?
The return is you
like
get
future
a blank,
considerations?
You get a blank canvas. You get a blank canvas.
Do you get an expansion draft?
I don't know, whatever. Who cares?
Wow.
So
you don't even keep Leon Draisaitl.
It's one or the other. You either have McDavid and what you have, or you don't have McDavid and you have nothing, and you're free of all, and you can start over.
Wow.
You can start completely over. So you want McDavid, you're taking all of our junk.
You got to give it to Ken for really Kenifying the crap out of that. I respect it. Wow. Sizzling take.
But no, sorry. No team can take that on. You only get 50 contracts in the NHL.
Well, you got to work it out. It's the off-season. You can do whatever you want.
If anyone can do it, it's Steve Yzerman.
Okay, we're talking about, I know you can't do that, but who's trading Connor McDavid anyway?
Who trades Wayne Gretzky?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Fireworks, man. Okay. Yep. Next question is from Jordan Sampson. Jordan says, if you were a GM and could hire any coach, living or dead, to be your bench boss, who would it be?
I'd hire a living coach.
Yeah, I'll take a living one. Yeah.
Well, certain NHL franchises, a head coach might do better. The skeleton up there might be more useful.
Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, that's right. I feel like we should have a disclaimer.
Weekend at Bernie Miracles.
I had a buddy who went as Bernie Lomax for Halloween stayed dead the entire party. So we would lift him and carry him around the room.
Nice.
And he just stayed there, flopped from the couch, not talking, sunglasses on. Nice. Committed performance.
That's good.
I think for this question, I feel like we should just have a no Scotty Bowman disclaimer.
Oh, come on.
Okay, you should have told us that before.
Yeah.
But you should have known that.
No, come on.
It's too easy.
Oh, okay. No, but think about this. What if Scotty Bowman just woke up this morning and decided, you know what? I kind of feel like coaching again in the NHL.
Yeah.
I think I'll put it out there that I'm coaching. I'd like to coach in the NHL. There would be teams falling all over each other
yes.
to give him Mike Babcock money.
Yeah.
maybe on a shorter term.
Right.
Because he's a little older. But, yeah. But he's the guy. He's the guy for me.
Yeah.
And maybe if you didn't want us to say, not say Scotty Bowman, you could have told us not to say
Scotty
Bowman. Okay, then I'll go Tobe Blake.
Okay.
I go Al Arbor in that case. My original answer was Scotty Bowman, but if not him, then Al Arbor.
It's interesting, Scotty Bowman, because we're working on a special project in a few months where we're doing these oral histories of famous games, and there's one where I talked to Scotty Bowman for it, and I talked to a lot of his players from the Habs of the 70s, and it's crazy the way they talk about how he kept them on their toes and how much he would read the news. So if there was a news story, it was Rod Langway that told me this, if there was a news story that a guy was going to start, Bowman would read that, and then because of that story, he would bench the guy for the game, so the guy would stay hungry, because the guy would be like, oh, there's a report that I'm going to start getting more opportunities, and just based on that, Bowman wanted to not be predictable, keep every player hungry, but so they never knew when they were going to be in the lineup, marginal guys.
At the time,
Langway being the example, he was more marginal.
Well, he was a marginal guy for them. That's part of the reason why he got traded, was he wanted a bigger role, and he wasn't getting it. But Steve Shutt always used to say about Scotty Bowman, for 364 days of the year, we hated Scotty Bowman, and on the 365th day, we picked up our Stanley Cup ring.
And maybe I've told the story on the podcast before, I forget, but just that I ran into him at the United Center like last year, and he just said, oh, I introduced myself, and he's like, oh, the hockey news, eh? You guys got in trouble for that thing you wrote. I was like, what thing? And he was like, and he walked away. So he can even keep us on our toes.
That's right.
If I had to pick...
keeps us on our toes.
What? Yeah. I was like, what? I was spinning. I was like, what is he talking about? And I started Googling, like, hockey news scandal, and I couldn't find anything, and I still don't know what he's talking about. I might go Pat Burns, just because he had a knack for whatever franchise he took over. He was a great turnaround artist, and he could take any team and make it just a lockdown club defensively. I was always impressed about that for Pat Burns. So that was my non-Scotty Bowman answer. So next question is from Lace 'em Up. And at Lace 'em Up Podcast, your rival podcast there, Lace 'em Up, huh?
Yeah.
You sending questions to your competition there, Lace 'em Up, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to be listening to see if you steal this from
us. No, that's just what they want.
It's going to be their headline. Let's give terrible answers. So Lace 'em Up asks, Jordan Binnington's two-year deal signed on Saturday takes him straight to UFA territory in July 2021. The issue is that Rask, Frederik Andersen, Pekka Rinne, Devin Dubnyk, Antti Raanta, Philip Grubauer, Peter Mrazek, Carter Hutton, Curtis McIlhenny are all 2021 UFAs. Is it a smart move by the Blues, but a smart move for Binnington? Interesting question, because if Bennington's going to UFA in a year where there's going to be a flooded market, that stands to reason it's a bad move for Binnington, does it not?
Not if you're betting on yourself. I mean, if there's one thing I've learned about Jordan Binnington, covering him in the Stanley Cup Final, and there wasn't much that I learned about him because he didn't let too many people in, is that he's got an enormous amount of self-confidence, right? This is a kid who thinks that... And I think there's something to it. I think he spent the first part of his career maybe not being devoted to being the best NHL player he could be. Mm-hmm. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
But now he gets it, and I think he thinks the sky's the limit for him. So he plays 2 years. He puts himself into that group of elite goaltenders in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And then he cashes in right after that. Because here, I mean, this one was to avoid arbitration too, right? This is probably about what he would have gotten in arbitration. Maybe he would have got a little bit more, but it would have been a two-year deal because he took the Blues to arbitration, so they would have elected a two-year deal. So this basically cancels out arbitration. It's a bridge deal, so to speak. And you know what? Like I said, with Jordan Binnington, I don't think any of us really knows for sure what this guy is capable or not capable of. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he caught lightning in a bottle for a couple of months and was just an average goaltender for the rest of his career. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the next Ed Belfour and ends up in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I mean, because I don't know. Just don't know.
And I blogged about this on Monday, and he hasn't even played everybody in his own division yet.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah. So that's how small a sample size we have. And like you said, like, he could be the next Andrew Hammond. He could be the next Dominic Hasek. You know, guys that start a bit late.
And
I think that's why this is such a good deal for the Blues, is they're not repeating the same mistakes that other cup winners have made.
They're not repeating the mistake they made with Jake Allen.
Yeah. Also that.
That's the mistake they're not repeating.
Yeah. And with it only being 2 years and 4.4 as an average value, it's a proper window to figure out what they have there.
Yep.
And if it's something good, then, well, you're going to have to double a salary next time. But if you have to do that, then obviously you have an excellent goaltender on your hands.
Right.
So you're totally willing to do that.
It's a good problem.
You're fine paying him $8 million if he's a perennial Vezina Trophy finalist.
Exactly. Paying guys like big contracts right after cup wins has proved to be disastrous for a couple of franchises. And it's not the players themselves necessarily, it's just how much space that ties up. Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, as soon as their extensions kicked in, the Hawks ceased to win playoff rounds. They haven't won one since.
Right.
LA Kings, after Kopitar's extension kicked in, they went into the tank. Part of that was just the machinations of the lineup, but part of that is also such a big chunk.
And you're paying a declining asset. You're paying a declining asset.
You're paying guys for what they did.
Yeah, in this case, you're not as much. Like, there's still some upward trajectory
especially for a goalie.
You know, I mean, but with Kane and Toews, they had to sign them. They had to sign them because if they had gone on the open market, like, Kane and Toews are underpaid. Or were underpaid when they signed that extension.
Yeah.
If they had gone on the open market, they would have gotten way more.
And a lot of GMs, I think Sam Bowman said this even for a story we did on like the top heavy roster construction, that they feel like they owe it, and Dean Lombardi too. It's like, even though you know you're paying for past production, it's like you owe it to your players because they won you a Stanley Cup, and that's sort of this old school mentality. Mm. It can be very flawed though because it hurts a team down the road. And now Dean Lombardi's not the GM of the LA Kings anymore.
Well, it's hard to say no to somebody who just delivered you a Stanley
Cup. Like Mary Gabbert, for example.
Yeah.
It's really hard because, you know, what do you tell your fans? Okay, we were committed to winning and now we're not.
I mean, that's right. And the thing is about the list that Lace 'em Up sent here, every one of those guys would be younger or older than Binnington when Binnington goes to market. So he still would have the edge, theoretically, on all of them if he's playing, if he's maintaining his level of play.
And if you're looking at 2 years from now, I mean, you look at that list and how old some of those goaltenders are at the high end. It's like, I don't know how many goaltenders you would take over Binnington in 2 years.
Right.
Like,
even now, who would you take over Binnington now?
Right now?
You'd take Rask?
Yeah.
You'd take maybe Ranta?
I wouldn't take Ranta because of the injuries. I would take maybe Freddie Anderson.
Maybe Anderson.
Yeah.
Just
maybe
on sample size.
Maybe Grubauer.
Like, McElhinney's going to be 100 in 2021, isn't he?
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Okay, so the next question comes from, what a name, Matthew Lord of Bread and Butter. What a name, Matthew. And Matthew asks, whatever happened to Wuzzy Ranger? And then this other guy, Cam at Legs Benedict, chimes in, it was lame next. Yeah, so I don't know. We just scrapped it because
we ran out of Rangers.
Well, it kind of run its course. You do some things. And I mean,
you know what the thing was? Hey, it was an organic.
It was fun. It was
fun.
We always had fun with it. I don't know if people, some people liked it because they used to comment on it, right? Like, but it was fun.
Because it was organic, and then it got to the point where we were like looking guys up on HockeyDB, and I feel that's where it kind of jumped the shark, where it's like, well, if we're actively seeking out players and wondering if they're a Ranger, then that's not really in the spirit of the game.
Yeah.
Paul Coffey, was he a Ranger?
No.
No.
Okay.
Played for pretty much everybody else.
Yeah, except for the Rangers.
Paul Coffey, was he a Carolina Hurricane?
Yes.
He was.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, that was a little too easy.
I'm going to say he had an 11-goal season.
Paul Coffey, was he a Boston Bruin?
Steven's going to look it up. Steven's going to look it up.
Yes, he was.
Okay.
He was.
Next question is from Kevin O'Brien.
Was he a Ranger? Never mind.
Kevin says, I know as journalists you're supposed to be neutral, but you obviously grew up with a favorite team and player. Who are they? For myself, my dad and I were Hartford Whalers season ticket holders, and Peter Bondra was my favorite player. So, first off, I'm not going to answer the team part. I like to keep that kind of under wraps because sometimes it can affect people's perception of us if they think that we're homers for a certain team. But I will answer the player part. And I was always a huge Steve Yzerman guy, and that's the number I wore for all sports. And it's like my favorite number, always has been, and I just love the way Yzerman played. That's my guy. Oh, Steven's holding up the stats for Paul Coffey.
You were right, 11 goals.
Boom.
Nice.
But not 44 points?
I didn't check.
All right.
40.
Damn.
40.
Pretty close.
Okay.
It's not bad.
So that's my guy, Steve Yzerman. You guys can answer the team part if you want to, but I'm going to keep it under wraps.
Yeah. For me, it's always been the Montreal Canadiens. It was a great bonding experience with my dad. My dad was a big Montreal Canadiens fan, so I became a Montreal Canadiens fan. We would watch the games on Saturday nights because when I was a kid, that was the only night hockey was on. They did have games on Wednesday night sometimes, but I had to go to bed all the time. First time I ever got to stay up to watch the entire game was in 1971 when the Canadians beat the Chicago Blackhawks in the Stanley Cup Final. My favorite player was a guy who retired after that season, Jean Béliveau. Got up when he scored a couple of weeks before the end of that season, the 1970-71 season, he scored his 500th goal on Cesar Maniego, and my dad came in and said, Jean Béliveau just scored his 500th goal, so I got to get up and watch it, watch the replay of it. So he was my favorite player. They were my favorite team growing up. And then after he left, it became Frank Mahovlich. Frank Mahovlich was big time my favorite player after that.
And then
the Sudbury Wolves, of course. I was like super, super into the Sudbury Wolves because that was my hometown team.
There you go. I grew up a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, and my favorite player was Russ Cortinel. I cried when they traded him for John Kordick, straight up.
And hey, then you should have cried.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, the next time Montreal played Toronto, I'm not sure. Obviously, I became a Leaf fan because I'm from Toronto, and that was the team and whatnot. But I mean, I grew up in the worst era of Toronto Maple Leafs hockey.
Like the Harold Ballard years.
Yeah. And the first time Russ Cortinel played the Leafs as a member of Montreal, if I'm not mistaken, they beat Toronto like 10-3. And I think Cortinel probably had two or three points in it. But Russ Cortinel is my first favorite hockey player.
And it's weird too, a question I've gotten before is, do you ever get, starstruck or nervous talking to players? And I never have, but the only exception being if it's someone that was your peak idol from your childhood.
Yeah.
So the first time I interviewed Steve Yzerman, that was the one time that I was like, oh my God, it's Steve Yzerman. Right?
Because
it was like a throwback to my childhood.
With me, it was every time I talked to Jean Béliveau, I'd call him Mr. Béliveau. I was lucky enough to have his home phone number so I could call him at home. I would get a little nervous and stuff, but it's always funny. Like my dad died 20 years ago, but it was always a big sort of bonding thing for me and my dad, the Canadians. And that, I think now I'll be talking to Ken Dryden, or like I'll see Scotty Bowman in Florida and we'll be chatting, and I'll be like, wonder what my dad would think about this.
Because
we used to scream at these guys on TV all the time. For Bowman's sure. juggling his lines again. My dad would go out of his mind.
Awesome. Next question comes from Ernie Morris, and Murray asks or says, I would love to see a summer hockey tournament similar to the TBT, the basketball tournament. Would there be any interest? Well, I'm going to start off by saying, what is the basketball tournament? I have not heard of it. Have any of you heard of it?
I Googled it.
Oh, nice.
Yes. And from what I gather, it's like an open 64-team basketball tournament. There's a $2 million prize for winning it. And so I guess you just kind of apply.
Is it like a street ball thing?
I guess. I don't know. I don't know how many players.
So like Jokic's not going to enter this tournament. Like it's going to be
right.
It's going to be schmoes for the most part.
Yeah, like the amateurs. The winner, according to Wikipedia, of the last one was like overseas elite. So it's like I gather it's
probably
like
a bunch of guys
some
who
guys
played
from
college
Europe.
and they all played men's league somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Okay.
So yeah. So what we're looking at here is like a 64-team single elimination hockey tournament that anybody can enter.
That sounds pretty exciting. So yeah, I would say yes. I think there would be interest in that. Absolutely. The question is, would you do it in the summer, or are you more likely to get interest with it? Like, would you do it during the All-Star break?
There would not be spectator interest. There would be not be commercial interest. Like, people are not going to watch a bunch of schmoes play hockey in the middle of the summer. No way, no how. People don't go to see. Like, people didn't go to see John Tavares play. You know what I mean? Like he should have been filling the building. Like, people don't go see pro hockey here. They don't go see Toronto Marlies, and these guys are almost good enough to play in the NHL. Would there be interest? I guess there'd be interest from a participation level. It'd be cool. But, like, if you're talking about sponsorship money and TV deals and stuff like that, not a chance in my opinion.
I'm kind of interested
which sort of makes you wonder where they're going to come up with $2 million.
Yeah.
But anyways, go ahead. Sorry.
Some guy that has $2 million want to put on a basketball tournament.
Yeah.
The thing for me would be if you got players that were at an elite level, and I think you would have to have it in the summertime just because of schedules, but all their teams would be like, don't do that. You're going to get hurt. But having said that, I know that they have something similar in soccer in Britain where there's a tournament where like college teams end up playing like Manchester United And crazy. I think it's the FA Cup or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
To me, that's always sort of fascinating. Where you're like, wow, wouldn't it be cool if like Michigan State ended up playing the Chicago Blackhawks or something like that? But it's, I don't know. The schedules just don't dictate it for hockey because it's such a more rigorous physical sport.
Like by the time summer comes, I don't want to talk about hockey. I don't want to watch hockey.
But you're doing it right now.
But I know a lot of people, like, they tweet out, like, last week, geez, I miss hockey. Oh, my God, I can't wait for it to start again. I'm okay.
Yeah, you
I'm
need
okay.
somebody.
You like to hang up the skates for a while.
That's right. Yeah. That's why Ken takes, like, 26 weeks vacation every summer, which he will be soon, so don't worry. You'll get a break from him.
Yeah.
But no, I agree. Sometimes, like, you need to miss something, right, to appreciate it.
Yeah,
even
exactly.
Even Wayne Gretzky.
How can I miss you if you don't ever go away?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Move the World Championships.
Oh, Steven says, move the World Championship.
Good plan.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay. For sure, Steven.
And then he says, ow, my shoulder. That's pretty mean. Like, it just happens. Steven
too
hasn't
soon.
Even gotten his medical treatment yet.
Yeah.
And I'm making fun of his shoulder. Like,
I made fun of how it happened. Cruel. He backed the camera back. And the cameraman backed into him.
Yeah, that cameraman. Yeah. Screw him.
Backed into him. Ouch.
Next question is from Chris C. And Chris C. asks, can the Bruins actually salvage a decent roster given their salary cap limitations? Well, to me, it's not about salvaging. They were one game away from winning the Stanley Cup final. And yes, you've lost Marcus Johansson, but overall, most of that roster is going to be intact. You lost Noel Chari, but again, you brought in Brett Ritchie, who can play a similar role checking-wise. It's still going to be a very good team, and I think a team that's very experienced and built to win in the playoffs. Like, they might not win as many regular season games as Tampa or maybe this year Toronto, but they're going to be a contender again as far as I can see.
They've got $8 million in cap space, and they've got to sign Charlie McAvoy and Brandon Carlo. Now, we know that that's
not
going to cut it, right? But it's the middle of July. I mean, they'll figure it out. They will figure this out, you know. I think the Boston Bruins are going to be, they're in that conversation still. As far as I'm concerned, they're in the Stanley Cup conversation without question.
They're a team that you do not want to play in the first round of the playoffs. Probably not in the second round either.
Yeah.
Still at this point. And as long as...
Yeah, the longer you can wear those guys down, and I think that's what we saw, the better chance you have of beating them. And it's not going to happen in the first two rounds.
No, and I was going to say, like, as long as Patrice Bergeron is viable, you're fine. But I think the window actually extends a little further because you're getting into this great succession there where David Pastrnak is still going to get a little bit better. I mean, he's amazing right now. He's going to be even better in the future. Charlie McAvoy is the same on the back end, where, yes, Zdeno Chara has slowed down. You probably are only going to get him for another year or two. But by that time, Charlie McAvoy is going to be that 25-minute night guy who just dominates at both ends.
Right.
And then you just fill in the gaps. You've got the depth already. You've got a decent system. I think they're fine for years.
But I think they've got depth guys. Some of those depth guys, I think, have proved that they can take on more of a responsibility if they have to move up in the lineup.
Like Sean Corrali.
Yeah. Like he guys like that. I think they can move up. Like, you know, I mean, they've got Charlie Coyle for another year, right?
Yeah.
And unless they extend him. So, you know, he's a guy that, I mean, he is their third line center, but man.
And Jake DeBrusk really made a big stride. Yeah. I think he's not done ascending. It's interesting, you know, so I'm definitely of the mindset that the Bruins are going to be fine. But if I sort of play devil's advocate, one thing that's changed is a couple years ago, you'd look at a contract like, let's say, David Backes's or something and say, oh, trade him to Arizona. But right now, the idea of like the salary floor team that's just barely getting to the floor and is willing to take on bad contracts, it's not that common anymore. And I think part of it is that the most common salary floor teams like Arizona and Florida are spending a lot of money and they're trying to go for it. So there isn't really that team that you know you can dump a bad contract to anymore. So I do think it takes, like someone asked me the other day, it was referring to whether Vancouver could find the money for Brock Besser, and it was like, you know, can they ship out Louis Erickson? And I was like, oh yeah, they'll just send him to wait, no, they can't send him to Arizona anymore. Coyotes are spending to the cap. So
maybe that's Detroit for a while.
Yeah, it could be Detroit.
You know what
Ottawa.
I mean?
Ottawa won't want to spend the actual physical dollars though.
But if you have a contract where the cap hit and the specific dollar
and
amount
are different, if it was a front-loaded contract,
bonuses.
Then you're only paying the guy $2 million, but his cap hits $5 million.
Yeah.
That's where those guys can really you can move those guys along.
So that's what Boston needs. If they could find theoretically a fit for like a David Beckham. That would be an example, right? But so next one is from Jordan Slatish. Who knows? It's one of those two. Why are kicking goals and goals directed in off the body purposely illegal? More scoring is what the league wants, right? Mm-hmm. That's a good question. And I actually was speaking about this with, it was Mitch Korn a couple of years ago, because he was saying, even though he's a goalie guy, he sort of liked the idea of being able to kick pucks in. I think we were talking about it because he was saying he used to like make rules for Dominic Hasek because he used to always want to throw his stick, but he was worried he was going to get his fingers broken. But what that reminded me of is why I think you'd have to be careful with that rule, even though I would like to see kick-ins. The problem is if you don't outlaw kick-ins, you're going to get a huge increase in kicks with skates. So you're going to get a lot more risk of injury.
No, it's definitely a safety factor. It's definitely a safety factor with kicking, I think. I mean, you can kick the puck to a teammate in open ice. You can kick it to yourself. You can, you know, but to actually kick the puck into the net, that might open up a bit of a can of worms that I don't think people really want to open up. And I mean, I don't know. I kind of get it. Like, you're supposed to have some skill, right? Like,
right.
You're supposed to be able to to have the puck on your stick and do something with it. You're not supposed to be able to like bat it with your hand or kick it or whatever. You're supposed to have some skill.
Having said that, when Andrew Shaw headbutted the puck in, that should have counted. I mean, that was pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Like, how many times is that actually going to happen?
Yeah.
If you can make that happen, I think they should count.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Fair. And I think you look back at Clint Larchuk taking an errant skate that caused the horrific famous accident, but that was just by an accidental collision. But if you have guys all game long purposely kicking near the goalie, how many more times are we going to see something like that happen? I know they've added the neck protecting guard, but you still run a risk of some
bad stuff happening. Goalies, the guy goes down and a guy kicks, like even if he doesn't hit him with his blade, like you get a skate boot in the head.
Concussion, absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't think we're going to see, like, it's been a topic of debate forever, but I think it's one of those ones where people just like, it's one of those blue sky things where people are like, well, what if, you know, and then everybody sort of has this conversation and they go, yeah, maybe it's best.
It's all same as high sticks, right? If you decided it's okay to high stick a puck, then you're going to get way more guys getting sticks in the face.
Right,
same problem,
right.
Gonna have another question, and I didn't write down the name of the questioner, but I still have the question for this one. Okay, it's sort of a bonus question. We're gonna finish off with this question, and the question is: are the St. Louis Blues going to be a one and done team, or do they have a chance to go all the way again this year? What do you guys think?
I've gone on the record several times as saying they're one and done.
Yeah.
I don't think they have the super elite star power to maintain this. I mean, it was so unpredictable. It was so, you know, nobody saw it coming.
Mm.
I just don't think that this is something they can maintain. I think, you know, they're the 2006 Carolina Hurricanes or the 2007 Anaheim Ducks. They're not the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're not the LA Kings. They're not the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah, I mean, full points for how they handled their business in the playoffs, and they got incredible performances all through the second half to get in there. But if they missed the playoffs in that crazy Central Division, it would not shock me.
Yeah, that's the thing too. I mean, you got to get out of that division.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like you might have to play Nashville or Winnipeg in the first round if you get to the playoffs. You might have to play Dallas again, who almost eliminated you.
Yeah.
You know, they came one goal away from eliminating you this year, and they got a lot better in the offseason. So it's, to me, there's just too much of a gauntlet in the Central to say, they've got what it takes to do it again.
I agree, and I always say status quo will never cut it in the Central Division. So if you look, Nashville, they brought in Matt Duchene. In Colorado, they brought in Nazem Kadri and Andrei Burakovsky and Jonas Donskoy. Dallas adds Pavelski and Perry. Even the lower teams, like, you know, even though we don't agree with what they're doing, Minnesota still theoretically gets better. They add Matt Zuccarello. Chicago adds Robin Lehner. And St. Louis has been stagnant.
And that's
okay, mm-hmm. right? It's okay that St. Louis has been stagnant, but I don't think it's a huge, a far cry to say they're going to slip a little bit. And even, you know, we've said we're not very bullish on Winnipeg anymore because not only did they not maintain status quo, they actually got worse because they lost a lot of players. So yeah, I'm actually worried about Winnipeg's chances to make the playoffs right now just because of how devastatingly competitive that division is. Yeah. But also, if we rank a team fourth or fifth, and you'll see our yearbook and pool book, they're coming out soon. I won't give away our exact predictions, but... You know, St. Louis, I'll say we do not have them at the top of the Central.
No, no.
It's not an insult if you're in the middle of the Central pack. It's just, that's the
thing. I still say it's 5-3, though. I don't care.
Absolutely.
I don't care how much better Arizona's gotten. And, you know, I still think it's a 5-3 configuration.
It would be 6-2 if it was allowed.
It'd be 8-0.
Yeah.
Well, no, 7. There's only 7 teams in that division. 7-1.
Yeah, 7-1. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Okay, everybody, well, that's it for the mailbag edition. Please send Stephen Ellis your well wishes, and let's hope that shoulder of his heals up, because he's a good guy, Canadian boy, Stephen Ellis. Okay.